In the past 24 hours in this territory, no single group within our military unit was not attacked.
Russia's president takes a step closer to invasion. It's Wednesday, February 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Ukrainians living in the United States react. Afghanistan fights measles. Afghans adjusting to U.S. life. Drones go viral. Reading letters from the past. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As Moscow announces its intention to officially recognize two areas controlled by Russian-backed separatists in Ukraine as independent countries, tensions continue along the Russia-Ukraine border. Each side accuses the other of causing violence in this increasingly complicated conflict. VOA's Heather Murdoch and Jan Bochat report from eastern Ukraine.
Soldiers and journalists flee to shelters after a bomb hits Novodevganska, a small Ukrainian town near the border with Russia. In recent days, Ukrainian officials say violence in parts of Ukraine near the contact line between government-controlled areas and areas controlled by Russian-backed separatists has increased dramatically. Russians and Ukrainians are accusing each other of ignoring international ceasefire agreements.
In the past 24 hours in this territory, no single group within our military unit was not attacked.
And on Monday, Russia reiterated its demand that Ukraine be permanently barred from NATO as a condition of peace.
If Russia faces the danger of Ukraine joining NATO, the threat to our country will increase substantially, because Article 5 of NATO's establishment treaty says that all NATO countries should fight on one of its members' sides if it is attacked.
And while world leaders continue to say diplomatic solutions may still be possible, in recent weeks, efforts to solve the crisis have failed, and NATO has repeatedly refused to comply with Russia's demands. Many buildings and businesses in Novoluganska have been abandoned for years, and for those who remain, sporadic violence has become the norm. Ukrainian military leaders say ceasefire violations have increased markedly in recent days, from 98 ceasefire violations a day on February 19, compared with 5 violations a day 3 months ago. Yet most of the country remains quiet but nervous about the coming days and weeks.
Here in this small town about 5 kilometers away from the border with Russia, we get an idea of how very diverse this country is in their opinions of this conflict.
Many families here speak Russian and have relatives living across the border. Since 2014, commerce and travel have been difficult, causing local business to drop by about 50%.
When people came from Russia, all the shops were selling more. Now it is so much less. Also, a lot of people have relatives in Russia they can't visit. It is so sad.
This train station used to host 30 passenger trains a day back and forth to Russia. Now, only cargo trains cross the border. Locals say families in this town are also often divided between supporters of Russia and supporters of Ukraine. But with the border region near the brink of war, many say they are united in the need for peace and security. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Novoluganska and Kozachalopin, eastern Ukraine.
There's much more on this and all the stories you hear on today's program. Follow them by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and VOAnews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China and Russia vowed closer ties. Ukraine is challenging that. World Court Myanmar genocide case clouded by representation dispute. Human rights expert says Myanmar junta is using weapons from Russia and China against civilians. Hong Kong orders mandatory COVID-19 tests for all residents. Australia reopens borders to international tourists as strict COVID-19 controls relaxed. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more. Visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram and Twitter, and our website, that's voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Ukrainians living in the United States are showing unity as a diaspora community in the face of Russian aggression toward their native country. VOA's Kane Faribault has more from Chicago.
Although she's been living in the United States for more than 20 years, Maria Zuma is still closely connected to Ukraine.
I became an American citizen back in 1999, but my heart, it's still in this, my home country.
While she is out of harm's way living in Chicago, thousands of kilometers from Ukraine, Zuma's thoughts are with her friends and her immediate family living in her home country, now potentially in the crosshairs of Russian military forces.
And it just breaks my heart, truly. Just a thought of Russian tanks just being on the border of my home, beautiful country, just makes me wanted to just cry.
The escalating tensions have Yuri Soroka debating whether he should stay in Chicago or prepare to fight in Ukraine.
Absolutely. These thoughts are going through my head every day.
What's kept him in the United States so far is his friends telling him that Ukraine needs advocates across the globe.
We have big, strong guys who are actually pretty good at war, at what they're doing. We need you in the U.S. doing what you guys are doing.
Which is why Soroka, Zuma, and hundreds more from the large Ukrainian-American community in the Midwest state of Illinois rallied for unity on the anniversary of Ukraine's Maidan Revolution that pressed for closer ties with the European Union.
We're having a vigil, a candlelight vigil, to commemorate the Heavenly Hundred. These are the civilians who were beaten brutally on February 20th, 2014.
Lydia Tukachuk is president of the Ukrainian National Museum of Chicago, a cultural focal point for the diaspora community during the deepening crisis between Kyiv and Moscow.
There's not much that we can do. We can show support, we can pray, we can call them, but being that far away, it's very difficult for us.
Tukachuk says many Ukrainian Americans feel helpless.
Many of them have children in Ukraine, grandchildren, grandparents, mothers, sisters, and how much can they do for them? There's really not much they can do for them.
As a community, we are pretty strong, and we are doing what we can to help Ukraine. We are at our place. We can help financially our friends, our families in Ukraine.
Soroka welcomes the news media's focus on the conflict.
And now when the things are really unwinding, finally we have that media attention of American press, and that's good.
As she prays and hopes for peace between Ukraine and Russia, Maria Zuma isn't sure if she should remain in her adopted country, watching the crisis unfold from afar.
That question I even ask myself, what I would do. And if I can, maybe, you know, I could go and volunteer there.
Getting there would present another challenge, as many airlines have canceled flights to Ukraine as war clouds continue to gather. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Chicago.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, one of the many challenges Afghanistan is facing. Happening now in Asia, authorities in New Zealand say police have been the target of two separate attacks by protesters staging a sit-in protest against COVID-19 vaccine mandates in the capital, Wellington. A protester was caught on video speeding in his car toward a group of officers Tuesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The World Health Organization warns a sharp rise in measles cases in Afghanistan is threatening the lives and well-being of millions of malnourished children. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 35,300 suspected cases of measles and 156 deaths have been reported in Afghanistan from January 2021 through January of this year. What is setting off alarm bells ringing is the sharp, rapid rise in cases last month. The World Health Organization reports a 40% increase in the number of measles cases in the last week of January. Although the number of deaths is relatively low, the WHO warns many children are likely to die from the disease in the coming weeks. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says measles-related deaths are not always reported in Afghanistan, so the toll is likely to be much higher than the figures suggest.
The rise in measles cases is especially concerning because of the extremely high levels of malnutrition in Afghanistan. Malnutrition weakens immunity, making people more vulnerable to illness and death from diseases like measles, especially children. In addition, measles infections can cause immune system suppression and immunologic amnesia, which increases susceptibility to all pathogens.
The World Food Program says Afghanistan is facing the worst food crisis on record. It says 1 in 3 people are going hungry, and some 2 million children are malnourished. The WFP warns 14 million children are expected to face potentially life-threatening levels of hunger, noting that malnutrition rates already are soaring. Measles is an extremely contagious viral disease. Lindemeyer says unvaccinated young children are at highest risk of getting sick and dying from it. In December, he says an immunization campaign was carried out in response to a measles outbreak. He says the campaign reached 1.5 million children in some of the most affected provinces.
And now WHO is helping to plan for a larger measles outbreak response immunization campaign, which will start in May or earlier if possible, aiming to reach more than 3 million children nationwide. Support from WHO includes helping with the process needed to secure additional vaccines and devices, as well as the operational funds and the support for planning the campaign.
The WHO says strengthening routine immunization is the best way to protect people, especially children, from getting measles. The agency urges governments to make sure at least 95% of their populations receive 2 doses of measles-containing vaccine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Much more on this story is online. Join us on social media at VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
Making headlines in Asia, U.S. Special Envoy for Climate Change John Kerry said not enough is being done to implement promises from the International Climate Conference in Glasgow last year, leading to an increasingly hot planet. Asia is partly responsible for major greenhouse gas emissions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. In August, Jan Mohammed Saber, a former local United Nations employee in Afghanistan, and his 5 children were evacuated from the country, but his wife was left behind. The children are now trying to adjust to their life in the United States without their mother. VOA's Nishaba Ashana reports from Atlanta, Georgia.
Jan Mohammed Saber, a former United Nations employee in Afghanistan, lives in Atlanta, Georgia, with his 5 children. They were evacuated after the Taliban took control of Afghanistan in August. But Saber's wife did not make it through the pandemonium at Kabul airport and remains in Afghanistan.
We had to reach to the place through the crowds, shootings, and beatings. It was difficult, and to protect the kids from a possible stampede, we were supporting each other. At the end, she could not get in. The kids and I entered, and then the gates were shut. They remained closed for 2 to 3 days, and it was impossible to bring her in, and we had to take the flight.
Now, life without their mother is hard for Saber's children.
They are asking for their mother every single day. They remember their mother even when having meals. It is difficult. It changes the whole environment. When they are changing their clothes or doing something else, they remember their mother.
Despite this, the children say they are happy to be in America.
We are happy to be here in the US, but we remember what our mother was doing for us. We were happy with her. She was preparing us food. We miss her. She was very nice to us. We miss her too much.
I'm happy that I'm going to school. I always remember my mother, and I miss her. I want my mother to come here soon.
The family can talk to their mother in Afghanistan and do so as often as they can, but there is no word on when she will be able to join them in the United States. In August, the United States and its allies evacuated more than 124,000 people from Kabul airport, but tens of thousands of additional Afghans remain in the country, looking for ways to escape the Taliban. For Nosha Bashna in Atlanta, Georgia, Roshan Nurzai, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. India has sent the first consignment of 50,000 tons of wheat it has pledged to give Afghanistan, where more than half the country is grappling with hunger. The grain is being transported via Pakistan in a rare instance of the archrivals setting aside their deep differences for humanitarian aid. More on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, coronavirus. Remember that? The isolation of remote Scottish islands has kept many residents far from the recent COVID-19 outbreaks plaguing much of Britain. It has also threatened access to medical care, including coronavirus testing. VOA's Arash Arabisadi reports on how the community turned to flying drones for a solution.
Drones like this one flying over Scottish Highlands carry precious cargo in the fight against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. They are able to navigate winds to deliver tests and blood samples to serve Scotland's most rural and isolated communities, bringing materials straight to a doctor's door. Dr. Miranda Barkham touts the program's success.
People are very supportive of it, actually. I think they think that anything that would help and improve patient care, they're on board with it.
Placing cargo in the bay.
Once the drone drops off its supplies, teams repack it and send it back to work. Small islands make up much of this area, and it could take hours or days for this type of back-and-forth test delivery, pick-up and drop-off to happen by boat. Hospital manager Caroline Henderson says using a drone makes quick work of healthcare.
You can get it off an island here within half an hour, and we can turn around the result within 2 hours.
Clinical lead Dr. Gordon Caldwell says getting the results to the lab this fast means less time waiting to be tested than if the patients lived in a major city.
The samples can be picked up, sent across. We can have the results even before the patient arrives.
The drones avoid choppy waters below, can reach an altitude of about 1,500 meters, and can fly at around 160 kilometers per hour. It's a pilot program to connect rural communities to modern healthcare, with the only real pilot sitting in a van with computer screens. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
Eleanor Reese's mother and father survived the Nazi Holocaust in Europe during the 1940s. After the war, but before they were married, they wrote letters to each other. Those letters led Eleanor on a journey to learn more about her parents' past. The result of that journey was just released in book form. Victoria Kupchansky has the story.
Eleanor Reese speaks and sings in Yiddish fluently. A talented and creative person, she's a writer, singer, actress, playwright, and theater director. But she says her main artistic achievement is the publishing of a unique book called The Letters Project.
Both of my parents lived through the Holocaust. My father lived through Auschwitz, and my mother was in Uzbekistan, in Fergana. That's where, from Poland, they both were. And my father died in 1976, my mother died in 1986, and when she died, I found letters that I didn't know she had.
The letters were written in German by Reese's father, Haskell Schlüsselberg. In 1949, Haskell Schlüsselberg was in Germany writing to Reese's mother, Rukili Hoff, who had immigrated to New York. He was planning to join her.
I am writing to you nonstop. I understand that you have your hands full until everything is in place. But please realize how very happy it makes me to read some words from you, my love. As to my coming to America, I can only tell you, my darling, that I would fly to you if I only had wings.
When the letters were translated into English, Risa wanted to learn more about her parents' story. She traveled to Germany and studied in the archives. She learned she had had a stepsister who had died during the Holocaust. She read her father's official account of his time in Auschwitz and how he managed to escape from the Nazis during a deadly forced march west from Poland into Germany, where thousands of Jews died or were killed. Things he had never told her while he was alive.
He didn't ever talk about it. Why? I don't know. I could only imagine that it was so horrible that why should he tell me? He loved me. Why should he give me pain? It's painful to know that your father was in hell.
When in 1945 her father fled the Nazis, he would hide in the woods and inside haystacks. The war was nearing its end by then.
He met with other prisoners who had run away, and then somehow the Russians came and he says they gave him some food, even though they themselves didn't have much. He wanted to go back to Germany, but the Russian doctor would not let him go because he was not well enough to go. So I would say that it was the Russians that were the first to save him.
Reese's parents, who had never met, finally united in Germany after the war, then moved to the U.S. For Reese, reading her father's letters was a way to get to know him better and to get to know herself better as well.
And it never really occurred to me the depth of his tragedy. He was broken when I was born already and just became more and more broken. I didn't know my father was a vibrant, handsome, smart, poetic fellow. So I learned who my father was. And I guess that means a little bit who I am.
Risa called her book The Letters Project. Its presentation took place at the National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne, where Risa had previously worked as an artistic director.
I look at these as treasured documents. I look at the, I think, what Eleanor is showing us and inspiring us, all of us, to hold on to those documents.
That's what Risa did, and it provided her with a unique and universal story about her parents' survival and past.
All of the people under German Nazi persecution at that time fought like hell to live. They, because some people say they went like sheep to the slaughter, which makes me so angry. Makes me so angry. They fought. They fought with everything. So I learned that too.
Victoria Kupchinetsky in Cold Spring, New York, VOA News.
That's our program. Thanks for listening to VOA Asia. You can join us online. Find us at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.